question.
Quite a lot, and I always say no. Well, there must be something. There must be, you know, I don't have a mirror in the studio to kind of draw from a figure. And then I remember thinking, well, I spent enough time looking and thinking to know where a head is on the body, where the arms are on the body. So there's some things that maybe are self, maybe that they are, they're not autobiographical, but there's something which you can. You can maybe borrow from, but they're not portraits of myself, but it's things that maybe are lent. So like maybe the shirt I'm wearing becomes embedded in the painting somehow. So yeah, I guess there might be a little bit of that there, but really they're anonymous and inventive, and yeah, they don't exist, these people. I suppose in a way that kind of marries into them kind of reappear in different guise. So that the metaphor for them maybe is there and that reappears, but them as a person maybe changes slightly, their attributes change or their clothing changes slightly. But yeah, they're never direct sort of representations of sort of portraits, if you like.
Did you want to question? I'll just ask, do you see work as a kind of visual diary? I mean, there's obviously like a narrative that kind of goes along with it. But how personal is it really? I mean, there's a lot of symbolism and, I don't know, how personal, is it to you?
I mean, they're personal in the sense that I made them, but they're fictitious, so there's no kind of, there wouldn't be a diary entry, if you like, and they're not, they're not really, they don't really kind of rely on the humdrum of every day. I suppose in a way they're kind of pure escapism from that. You know, I remember when I just graduated, or just about to graduate from my undergraduate, and it was just as the Iraqi, I think, the Labour government had just kind of decided they were going to invade in Afghanistan. And I remember thinking then, this seems completely insane, and they're not political paintings at all. But I remember thinking, how could you make anything creative when there's all this destruction going on? So I think there was this kind of knee-jerk reaction to suddenly making things which were a bit absurd and a bit dumb, a bit daft and a bit silly, and trying to give those a kind of a sensibility and a purpose. So and I'm not saying that continues now, but there's a dialogue of things not necessarily being the humdrum of every day, I guess. So they're the antithesis of a political painting. They're the antithesis of something which is rooted in modernity, as I mentioned earlier. But they're everything sometimes, and they're nothing at the same time. They're just ideas. They could be just the ramblings of what you thought that morning. But often they're ramblings that kind of reoccur in the sense that you thought of that, and then 6 months later you're still working on it, and you try and pull that back to being the idea maybe. Yeah. If that's the way that the painting feels like it's going. But they're never kind of like, I don't sit down and kind of think like today I'm a painted guy in a suit wearing a bowler hat. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah. So it's not ever going to stop, is it really? It's always going to be like continuous, isn't it? I mean, do you think that, is it possible for you to actually stop and just like do something like completely different? Or is it...
In the sense of
it's all quite different anyway, isn't it? So that kind of...
Do you mean in the sense of picking up a, like, stopping painting and maybe moving into a different discipline?
Not necessarily stopping painting, but maybe painting in a completely different style, or...?
There is an attempt, I suppose, with every painting to start them. Not necessarily every painting, but maybe when they finish or they appear in a gallery or they're seen by an audience, they probably look like they've all started from... they've all been made in the same process. But I started... I was thinking about this earlier, actually, simple things that I was going to talk about. I thought they're the most boring thing in the world to talk about, and I didn't want to kind of bore anyone, but even like making my own paint instead of buying tubes of paint, which I still, buy tubes of oil paint, like grinding your own pigment and binding it with oil. Little things like that, sort of things which I think make the process of the painting different. Ultimately, they maybe don't kind of get read like that when they're seen by an audience, but even like working on different canvases. So like the grade of canvas, the weave of linen, just really simple things changes how they look. So like I said, they're kind of like baby steps, or that you could see them being baby steps, but it feels like when you're making the work, it feels like you're kind of making great strides forwards. And that can be the same with kind of sitting down and thinking, like, could I do this for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or will it just stop tomorrow? Will I not be able to, you know, physically get into the studio or afford to get into the studio? And then think, well, what? When did I decide I was only ever going to make paintings? I ask that all the time. When did I think I would only paint and not take photographs or make films or make sculptures? So I always think, right, I'm going to investigate into kind of, you know, carving stone or making some, pouring some lead bronzes or you know, casting, and then I get seduced by paint again. And I think that's a question that I can never really answer. You know, I don't know. I'd like to think I could kind of go and spend a year and only draw,
yeah,
but then I know after 2 or 3 days I get seduced by the painting again. So, was that, again, that could be me just kind of making that up just to advocate painting. But it kind of happened. I just have a bit of intentions, you know, right, this summer I'm not going to paint, I'm just going to draw, and then a week later I'm back in the studio.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you, what sort of rate do you work? Because I read about that residency where you produce 32 paintings and 20 finished. Uh-huh. I think I read 6 weeks, but I think you said 8 weeks,
yeah,
which seems phenomenal, because you talked about working and reworking, uh-huh, and remaking. So there's a lot of thought process, but yet there's a lot of spontaneity. What rate do you work at?
It changed, but I suppose that residency, I mean, it was like being trapped like a kind of a king, I imagine, if that's how kings are trapped. I got flown out there and put up I suppose in many ways it's kind of like S1, but it's been, that is, you know, a sort of a private patron just funds it. So there's a gallery, and then there's an apartment upstairs. So you kind of, basically my commute was 3 flights of stairs, if that. So it's like, not even as long as here to there. I lived and I worked. It's over 24 hours a day, and everything was done for you. You know, I ran out of paint one day, and they sent someone out to go buy my paint. And, you know, my fridge was stocked with food, yet every day they'd take me out for lunch and dinner. And I was like, you know, this is incredible. So I became aware of how little you actually need to make work. You know, you can kind of make a lot with very little. So there was a kind of an excess there, but with that excess came time. And I think because I literally didn't have to worry about anything other than being in the studio. And then the sort of second half of the residency, they decided, I think it was around the time of when the Icelandic volcano situation happened. So I was supposed to go for 3 months, and because the flights were delayed, and then something happened there, and it was either not going to happen, or we do it in 8 weeks. And then with the volcanoes, that delayed my flight by, I think, 10 days. So I only had 6 weeks, I think, pretty much. And I thought, well, if I spend pretty much every waking hour making the work, I'll get there. I'll get something that can be installed. So, yeah, I mean, when you work like 18, 19, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can kind of, it's amazing what you can produce. I mean, there's a lot of it was, you know, kind of got rid of in the end and painted out. But, you know, to have that sort of time, it was a real luxury. And I don't think I could do it again now, but I mean, in sense of rate of how many works I make, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm sometimes working on 4 or 5 paintings at any given time. They can be, you know, this size, or you know, showing New York, there's one that's 4.5 meters. I think by 2.5. I worked on that from December 2012 until May of this year, which is probably the longest I've ever worked on one painting. But then I was working on other ones simultaneously, so it's kind of hard to say how long a large painting takes and how long a small painting takes.
Were they all large scale ones in that residency?
No, the variety of sizes. But yeah, I suppose I surprised myself, because you know, when you think all you've got to do is just turn up and do, you know, you don't have to go shopping, you don't even have to socialise if you don't want to, you can just lock yourself away. So yeah, I don't think that could ever be replicated, I don't think. And I mean, that's one thing I would say, if you ever get the opportunity to apply for residences or things where you're kind of taken out of your comfort zone, I guess, and you've kind of got to do these things and definitely...
Did that not make the paintings go a bit mad? That sort of, you know, the fact that maybe you did go out and socialise and all that stuff, but being more and more contained, because, you know, you have quite a rich fabric into the studio, but I think a period that's that intense and that, you know, nose to the canvas, the big figures and the...
I don't know, I kind of felt like I had to kind of, I felt maybe that they should be more more purposeful in how they should look when they're finished. So I thought, well, like, I don't have the luxury of 6 months, which still isn't a huge amount of time to make a show, but, you know, a year, let's say, I don't have that luxury of kind of, if this isn't working, I can put it to one side for a few weeks or a few months. I knew everything, every mark kind of had to count, and often, you know, they were overthought sometimes, they just ended up being sort of derelict and being painted out, and I'd start again. I mean, they were wet through when the show opened, they were kind of literally, they were moving, and they sort of firmed up for a while, but... yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I've seen that one again. So the one in S1, the more panoramic painting that was made there, and I don't know. Like looking at bits of the dark, I can't remember how I made. You know, sometimes when I'm not saying there is this kind of sort of presence of not knowing what you're doing, but sometimes when you kind of you're chasing your tail, something quite exciting can happen with that. It can have its downfalls as well, but it can be quite a sort of a rewarding experience, I guess.
So it forces you to go onto a different level.
Yeah, or it forces you to make mistakes which you've maybe got a standby, and you know, and they can be like really rewarding things. And I mean, in a weird kind of way, going back to the thing of like the little sort of idiosyncrasies that you kind of maybe don't think actually affect your working practice. You can't buy oil primer, or you can buy oil primer which takes like 6 months to dry, but doing the residency for 6 weeks is never going to work. So I had to kind of, again, make my own primer. Now, that's where it started. Like, well, I can't make these paintings without a primer. So, because of certain rules and regulations, it's different to the EU. You couldn't buy oil-based primer out there. You could buy gloss paint, which is an oil paint, but you couldn't buy the primer. So, kind of making paints, and maybe that speeded up the process, and kind of cutting things out, and yeah. It's interesting.
Is there any other questions?
Could I just ask you, you said the thing at the beginning I was very interested in, you said, when you were talking about the evolution of the work early on, you said a lack of Britishness. So I wondered what you meant by that. And then there's another question that sort of possibly continues with that. I'm interested in you speaking more about this carnivalesque, because it really it's like a modern carnivalesque that you seem to be working through, and I just wondered if you could speak a bit.
Yeah, so I think when I noticed it when I was working at the National Gallery, so I think it was like I say, I'd go out and I was in the room, so I'd be a room warder looking after the Canaletto's and the Goyas and the Raphaels and everything, and it was great. It was like the best job you could have if you weren't going to be in the studio. But then when they realised that I was an artist or I liked the paintings, they were like, right, you're now in the security, you're on the front doors. And that was kind of like, it seemed like the most stupid thing to do. Well, why not leave a guy in there who generally is passionate about the work to protect them, if you like, even though no one was really going to come and damage them. It was like kind of self-flagellation, really. You were caught on the front doors and you weren't allowed to kind of go into the gallery and look at the paintings. Well, you could go on your break and look at work, but you kind of, you know, well, it was like being paid to look at art. So I was put on the front doors with a few other guys. So when there was like the EDL would come down or whoever it was, you were like on the doors to stop people coming in, and you just see all the stuff that was going off in Trafalgar Square on a Saturday or Sunday. Every day would be different. You'd have, like say, St. Patrick's Day or National Australia Day, all these things that were so unworldly. But then you realise, well, you're in London, massive homogenised society. And, you know, I'd only just moved from Sheffield at the time. I spent pretty much all my, you know, up until being 21 in the north, where there was a regionality and there was, you know, you could go to a sort of a local fete or a fair and there'd be well dressing and there'd be a guy walking around dressed as a giant cornflake or something like that. You know, there'd be like regional oddities. Mm. And that's what I wrote my thesis on, was like the idea of this loss of, well, not loss, but there's a presence out of London, where you go into a metropolitan, things just become the same. And there's not necessarily religiously like that, but there's things become, in a way, unless you start to investigate them, or maybe because I wasn't from that area, I wasn't aware of these little sort of pockets of Britishness, but it felt like it was becoming, like it was becoming more exotic or more displaced. So when I'd come back up to see my parents or see my wife's parents, we'd often go out and do stuff for a day trip. And then because you were making the active decision to go out and see something, I became aware that there was these things going off. And like a big Cumbrian that's got the kind of Victorian underpant wrestling and little things that were again unworldly unless you kind of start to look under these sort of topics or subjects. And I think I was kind of aware that, I suppose it comes down to religion as well, I guess. In a lot of the paintings I was looking at, where there was the idea of the carnival, so lamenting from eating meat, giving up meat or abstaining from alcohol or food. I suppose in Britain, the demise of religion meant that we didn't really have these things that we kind of adhered to. So like Christmas and Easter, I mean, this is my how I kind of interpreted it. Christmas and Easter became these kind of corporate events where you'd go out and buy 25 chocolate eggs, and you wouldn't really give up anything for Easter. You'd just gorge on Cadbury's cream eggs, or the nation would. And the same thing for Easter, at Christmas. It kind of lost its traditional meaning. And I became fascinated in that, but by looking at kind of the historical sort of depictions, I guess there was a kind of a way where you could kind of sort of see how we got to where we are from there. I guess, and of course, they're not. They're kind of fantastical, and they're imagined, and they're invented, but there's a trace of that thing of us forgetting maybe part of our history, through necessity, I guess, but also through because it's not, maybe not interesting in it. You know, Mr. Cabbage Parrot's far more interesting than like not eating or giving up something for 30 days. So the thesis became encompassed by this idea of the carnival, and you know, if you say carnival in Britain now, you think of the Notting Hill Carnival, which by default has gone from being a British tradition, which has taken to the the Caribbean, and then gone through a filter and come back. And it's kind of fascinating to see how that's evolved. It's a British identity, but it's gone through so many different filters, which would be unlike anything you'd see in Sheffield, or maybe you wouldn't in Sheffield, but Chesterfield, or a small town, Huddersfield certainly. So I was kind of fascinated in that by how things had evolved, or things had just been forgotten. And I suppose making the paintings were like, I was looking at a lot of art historical references, and I was wondering how that could be validated in 2005, 2006, and I found a parallel between the carnival and what I was painting, I guess, the costume, the devil's cloth, the diamond formation, how all that came about and denoted certain things, and then, you know, I mean, I could ramble on about it, but it was just interesting how, you know, you could go, like, say, to Topshop and buy, I don't know, I said Topshop, Gokey or Pringle, and you could buy a Pringle jumper with a diamond formation on it and not know where that came from and what that meant historically. And then through reading up on it and researching it, I arrived there through default, and I kind of started to re-educate myself through painting, which was kind of fascinating, I guess.
Because I'm sort of thinking about Jeremy Deller and that whole type of work that seems to go back to these traditions, British, English, whatever tradition, Scottish tradition, and it's almost that there's sort of a group of people that have lost them, that, not saying this necessarily about your work, but go back to them because they have a certain exoticness, which of course is what the Trafalgar Square plays out, other nations' exoticness, other nations' sort of culture. So it's really sort of those, I've been to some of those Russian ones, and they're really just this weird amalgam of chanting and Russian punk, like just next door to each other, this really quite crazy combination. But sometimes I think it is that thing about this feeling that something else took its place for a while, and then you can go back to that. You go back to the rural. You go back to those traditions, and somehow, sometimes it's like a new exotic thing that gets reclaimed.
Yeah, I think also that there's a kind of, as a nation, we are a nation of under-celebrators. If we won the World Cup, but we wouldn't celebrate St. George's Day because that'd be too much of the kind of iconography, would be like EDL or National Front, and it just seems like something. I mean, I think if there was a poll and you asked, I mean, I can't even remember when St. George's Day is, 22nd of April maybe, or 22nd of May, but we all know when St. Patrick's Day is, 17th of May, isn't it, or March, obviously. But then even like with that, it became corporatised by Guinness. Like, you look for an image of, I remember one year they filled the fountain with like green food dye, so this spurting green fountain to Park Square, and they don't do it anymore because of certain reasons, probably damaged it, but it's now sponsored by Guinness. It's kind of lost what it had. It's become too sort of sanitised, I guess. But then I suppose, like, coming back up here, you can see certain cottage industries which are kind of, I'm not saying they're tapping back into that, but out of necessity, people don't want to go and spend £4 on a pint of Heineken. They'd rather go and have a local Sheffield. So there's a kind of return to the kind of the sort of the home spun. But I don't think that's necessarily a fad or a phase. I think people are just annoyed with the humdrum and the kind of having things rammed down your throat. I think people want to go and investigate, well, what did that used to be like? You know, what was rye bread like compared to, you know, Kingsmill extra thick sliced toasty and things like that. So it's kind of interesting just watching it, which has nothing to do with art at all, but you can kind of draw a parallel just like with wine.
But there's also a funny thing that goes around that, though, isn't it? So you go consume a local beer and it's still in that consumption thing. So the number of, I live near, can't remember, Bogue, this new area, I can't remember, and the amount of artisan bakeries.
Yeah.
So it's this other form, it becomes this other form of consumption of the tradition.
But it almost becomes ridiculous. So I've got a studio in East End still, and when I first moved to London, that's where my studio was, and it was an armpit, you wouldn't want to go there. And certainly night time, you wouldn't want to walk the street, you'd leave the studio and you'd run to the Overground, which would be half an hour late. And now they run every 2 minutes, they're lovely because of the Olympics, and they're always too nice because you know they're going to get damaged. Like you say, every corner, which was an art studio, is now an artisan bakery, or there's a guy making candlesticks, or there's a guy who can take your jeans in there, they'll cut them up and sell you them back for three times the amount. You know, it's just like this absurd. There's a cafe around the corner, which is a good cafe. You wouldn't really want to go and eat there unless you want food poisoning, but it was, you know, if you needed some energy, you could go and have a bacon sandwich or something. That closed down and became a microbrewery, which closed down, and now it's a guy who will, you can go in and get breakfast, and he also sells custom-built motorbikes. So it's absurd through kind of people wanting the alternative or looking to see that. It's not even someone monopolised, it's just a guy who's going, well, I like motorbikes, and I like serving breakfast. But, you know, health and safety, we should never go and do inspection there. There's a guy like covered in oil. Fine. Well, it's not even fine, it's poached, everything's really nice and not greasy. But that just seems, that's kind of like just watching the world pass. And as an observation, it's kind of interesting. Standing afar and looking in, I guess, is kind of interesting. But yeah. But I suppose art in that way, it's such an antiquated way of being of vocalising ideas, isn't it? You know, taking a photograph even, which is way more modern painting or sculpture, but it seemed like, you know, why do it when you can just do it on a computer now? I mean, there's something there that makes you want to invest time into doing it. You know, and that's not, it's not kind of becoming sort of twee or anything like that, it's just an inbuilt desire to kind of do that. I suppose you think early man, they just had, you know, earth and a stick and they drew, and it's kind of like, it's not really evolved much from there. We have used charcoal, burnt wood, the canvas, cotton, wood as a stretcher. It's kind of very sort of primitive stuff. And paint is kind of, you know, coloured earth mixed with it. It's like, it's basic things. So, but you could probably replicate that on a computer now. It'd be a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Also your work similar to Trinidadian, well, based artists such as Chris Cavilli and Peter Dory, and even like the silhouettes remind me of Carl Walker's work as well. So I just wondered if you could talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, Dory and Cavilli are artists that I've heard of. I suppose as a painter, you could not be in awe of their work. And I suppose they were making paintings when painting was completely fashionable. So I'm aware of their kind of heritage as a kind of contemporary painter. My tutors were their students. So there's a kind of a lineage without me actually knowing them. And without that being a necessity or something which is important, I think as a student, I remember seeing Doig's show and feeling like, how can you go and paint when you've seen this? And I suppose with Carla Walker, you know, seeing an image of her work in the silhouettes, I don't think I... It was only a few years later when I was looking at the idea of the souvenir and this kind of Victorian device of the sort of the black silhouette. If I'd have then made a direct link from Carl Walker and thought, I'm going to start having images of silhouettes on my wall, I wouldn't have done it. Similarly with the monopod, that idea of this kind of head or this afro head and a leg, that came back through default, painting something out and being left with a limb, which started to, the kneecap started to look a head, which then kind of formed into this sort of more figurative anatomy, if you like. It was only when later on, when the show was on actually, someone came ahead and said, have you read, I can't remember what it's called, Discoveries of the World, and I can't remember the title of the book, and something of the Silk Route. So it was basically a book of stories and fables of people who'd been the first explorers, I suppose, of the Americas, coming back with tales and fables of what they'd seen and what they'd witnessed. And I've never read it, I was never aware of it. I think if I had, I wouldn't have made those paintings. I would have felt it was too similar or too close to the bone of what had been depicted. And I just would have gone there. And in reference to kind of contemporary painting, I think it's kind of, it's hard to sort of, I suppose, you know, I don't really think about it on a day-to-day basis, but when you get asked a question, I think it'd be impossible to not take on board influences. I suppose as an artist, you're kind of like a sponge, you kind of take in things, you absorb things and you get rid of things. And yeah, that's kind of impossible to not do that. And I suppose with the kind of, I suppose I've always been fascinated with costume and clothing, and I suppose if you look at a kind of, going back to that thing of modernity, you look at kind of contemporary clothing, jeans and a jumper and a shirt, pretty mundane and boring items of clothing, whereas like, you know, the top hat or the dandy, the flanelle, there was something there which wasn't exotic necessarily, it was something which was so far removed from the everyday that it just seemed, it was enchanting maybe, it was interesting, it was intriguing. And then that kind of, you start looking at costume and how that can denote something or suggest something, whether it be colour, whether it be pattern. So there's this kind of dipping your toe into something that you're not sure about and seeing what happens. And that kind of can be interesting. It can offer a lot of problems and it can solve a lot of problems, but it can kind of get the ball moving again, I guess.
I'm just trying to kind of answer any of the questions.
I suppose the idea of the empire as well, the kind of the colonial hunter's hat. I started looking at just the idea of things that were outmoded and outdated as well. So the pipe, for me, feels like a perfect archetype of outmoded and outdated iconography. I mean, you think of a pipe now, for me, I think of it, you know, you could go down Camden Market and buy a hash pipe, or you might see a guy smoking a crack pipe, but to see a kind of a Michi carved pipe, or both granddads used to smoke pipes, so there was that thing which, even then, it was so outdated to smoke a pipe. It was like shorthand, something which was historical without it being about a pipe. It was just something which suggested that. It was something which kind of was a cue towards something else. And then through that you start to look at things which are suggested through the process of looking at the pipe or describing a pipe, and costume kind of follows on with that, I guess. Does that answer your question? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of difficult, isn't it, with with making paintings and not being interested and intrigued by what all the painters, what they're making, what they're discussing, what they're interested in. And I think I got offered to go to Mexico to do a residency there. This guy said, "Oh, you paint cactus cool." I don't want to go because I think it'd be too close to what I'm. You know, I went to a fake cactus ranch in Kansas. And that was almost too much. Going to Mexico and paint the Day of the Dead festival. Well, no, I just think it'd be too much. It'd be like seeing the side of it. It's like going to an art fair. Artists shouldn't go to art fairs, I don't think. Because it's art in the context of it being seen, which, you know, you kind of make work and there's a hope that it might be seen. But it's like sitting on a wall and you're comfortable on this side. That side, yeah. That for me is like, would be going. It'd be too much of a souvenir, it'd be too much of a tourist, maybe. And I quite like sitting afar and maybe missing the point sometimes as well.
Ignorance is bliss.
Maybe, but I think there's something, you know, there's a kind of interpretation, whereas if you went there, it'd be like that thing if I went and was kind of a participant in the Day of the Dead festival, or I went there to kind of look at the cactuses, it would just be a bit, coming back, you'd just be describing something you'd witnessed. And I think there's something nice for me when things get lost a little bit. And they become slightly skewed by how you interpret them or how they're described and how then they're interpreted by other people. Whereas if you were just to go and sort of document something, it would just be that, it'd be back to that blueprint. And the idea would be, for me, would be way more interesting than the actual output. That's only me, this is just me ranting away here, but that's how I think, well, I just said don't turn down the opportunity of going to the residency, I turned down the opportunity of going to the residency, it was just too much.
I think it's time to draw it to a close. Thank you very much.
Thank you.